This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mak, Kusu Chuang and Wang Xiaoning. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, Thursday the 22nd of August, and we're this much closer to the weekend. It's like every day I'm just counting down until Saturday. I don't know about you guys.
We're like crawling towards the weekend. I were like inch by inch, foot by foot.
Kusu Chuang never crawls. Kusu Chuang bounces around.
No, okay? Do you
check out his latest Change super cool sneakers he's wearing now?
Yeah, they were the first things I noticed when I walked into the office because they're so in your face.
Yeah, they're like the shade of a ripe tomato.
I call them the Sarigars.
Sarigars.
Yeah, I call them the Sarigars. I got the left Sarigar, the right Sarigar. They're red, named after our esteemed former Treasury Sec Gen. Yes. The dancing man. It went viral on YouTube. He was dancing on stage.
Oh, yes, he was.
Doing... in a pair of bright red sneakers. Yeah. Very stylish. Yeah.
Okay, so you're following his footsteps, literally.
That's right. So these are, you know, Manolo Blahnik Sarigars.
Your homage to him.
Okay. Well done. In the meantime, though, we've got lots of fascinating discussions lined up for you this morning. What are we going to be talking about, actually?
Wives, do you stand up for your husbands? Are you their number one defender? Well, in Singapore, the first lady is clearly her husband's biggest cheerleader.
Ho Ching, no less.
I talk about
an item in the Star about how two ministers, one minister is accusing the other minister of missing the wood for the trees.
Excellent. Now, if you want to weigh in on those conversations, remember you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. First, though, we're going to be talking about the key to success that apparently nobody teaches you. So be sure to stay tuned for that here on The Morning Run, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Shangri-La by The Kinks, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Chuang and Xiaoning. Now, everyone has their recipe for success, right? You know, they say, you have to be a really efficient operator. You have to be a really great innovator. You have to hire the right people. But there's this article on The Ink, which basically says that there is really just one key to success, and that is actually being able to reach out for help. Because the person who wrote the article is a founder of the Delphi Group. His name's Thomas Akulopoulos. And he basically, it's writing about his experience, right? And how he had a few people in his life whom he reached out to for help and who actually opened doors for him throughout his career.
Yeah, this is very important for people who want to try and make it in life, right? For success metrics and success recipes. And I think he's actually quite right. I mean, obviously there's not one panacea to everything, but having the right people and mentors who believed in you and believed in what you're doing is very important. And you know, history is littered with examples where if you hadn't had those two or three individuals in your life, and you know, I want to cite Malik Ali, for example. I mean, he's been very open with the people that helped him in his life, and those two or three people didn't believe in him. There was no way he could have, like, you know, in a way made it.
We all need our own cheerleaders,
that's right?
Cheer us on and kind of guide us where to go. I mean, especially when you're starting out in life, you're clueless.
Yeah, even Brigadier General Lee Hsien Loong, who we'll talk about.
Yeah, yes, he's number one cheerleader, right? But I think that, yes, these people can open the doors for you, but you have to be the one to kind of push it through also. It's something that you must want badly for yourself, right? Otherwise, at the end of the day, where will the open door go to?
You have to push yourself to seize that opportunity, right? And to a certain extent, create those opportunities for yourself as well, so that there's more opportunity for these people to step into your life, more opportunity for luck to take effect. So for you, what would be the most vital thing for someone to succeed, do you think?
Prayer, lots of prayer. Prayer. No, jokes aside, I think a little bit of faith in yourself that you can do it. I think sometimes we're always clouded by so much self-doubt that we are just overwhelmed with fear, that we are just paralyzed. We don't even start. Then we don't even begin to think it's something I can achieve.
Yeah, that's why people stay in employment, stay in the same job for 35, 40 years, and they never venture out into the scary world of business. And you know that South African Hall of Fame golfer, Gary Player, right? He won seven majors. He said that the harder he worked, the luckier he got. And at the end of the day, people back winners, right? If you don't look like someone who's going to win the game, or says a very good chance of winning the game, game. They're not going to bet on you. They're not going to endorse you, underwrite you, believe in you, fund you, whatever. And the harder you work and the more resilient. So for me, my recipe to success is resilience. The ability to bounce back from adversity. If you don't show that ability to come back from a... And everybody's going to have downfalls, right?
Yeah, nobody's...
Everybody's going to get hit back.
Nobody has gone through life without one, two, or like a gazillion failures, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You'll know this guy, right? So Chiwen, John So.
Yes.
Okay, so he's obviously in the...
Isn't he in a bit of a, in a, bit of a pickle
for,
right now?
For the penny stock collapse. But you see, this guy, he's your typical China man.
Never give up.
Never give up. He's like Fu Kok Yong, man. Well, you smash in back right corner, he come back. You smash back left corner, he come back, man. They and never die. They always come back.
Because he failed in Malaysia, he did it in Singapore.
Yeah, right? Yeah. He's a bad example, but basically he just comes back all the time.
Yeah, I think for me it would be basically raising your hand, right? Being that hand raiser, even if you're terrified, even if you're not sure you can do it, volunteer for the opportunity and figure it out after that. Because that's the only way you really push your boundaries, you know? Because if you stay within your comfort zone, realistically, you're never going to advance, or you're never going to learn.
Didn't a wise old man from Jerusalem once say, "Ask and you shall receive"?
But the other important, I think, takeaway from this article is that after you've achieved success, isn't it your job also a way to pass it on?
Pay so that's forward. Paying it forward, right?
Yeah, and I think that's so important, right? Because it's like karma, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Somebody was good to you, you got to, you know, return the favor.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. That's how it works, right? So people who are, you know, once they hit their pinnacle of success, whatever that definition is, then you see them, they become philanthropists, they become charity donors, they become, you know, funders and venture capitalists because they want to give back. And then the more humble ones of them will just give advice and, you know, and dispense knowledge in the hope that younger people can cut corners when they failed in the past.
But you don't even have to wait until you really make it, right? You know, everyone is somewhere on this journey of their career.
Yeah.
And sometimes someone who's a little bit, you know, more junior to you on this corporate ladder will just ask you, hey, you know, I'm interested in this company. What can you tell me about them? Or I'm going for an interview. You know, what are they looking for? And it could literally just be taking 10 minutes to give them a call.
Absolutely.
And give them what advice or what knowledge that you know, right? It's all these little ways that you can actually find to pay it forward, even if you yourself are not exactly a millionaire yet.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to be Steve Jobs to pass it on.
Correct.
At the end of the day, right? Even in your normal capacity, somebody asks you for advice.
Yeah.
Or somebody suggested, and you can say, hey, why didn't you think of Joe? You know, he's really good at that. Give him a chance. You know, those little comments actually go very far.
Well, I don't know whether you guys remember your first jobs, right? But in my first job, there was two kinds of people. The more generous seniors and the less generous seniors. You know the kind, right?
Yes.
Yeah. They just sideline you and make you feel like terrible, right?
Yeah.
And then there's the other kind, the nicer kind.
And usually the nicer kind go further.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The nicer kind of build goodwill, I guess you could say. But do let us know what you think. What is your key to success? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have a couple of messages coming up for you, and then we'll be talking about whether Singapore's Prime Minister deserves his high salary, at least according to his wife. So that will be coming up right after this, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was We Built This City by Starship, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Chuang and Sean. Now, I think we're all quite fascinated with how much our world leaders generally make in terms of their salaries. And a finance website called Seedly ran an article titled, "Why is the salary of Singapore's Prime Minister so high?" Because they tabulated the annual salaries of a number of leaders, including Lee Hsien Loong, Carrie Lam, Donald Trump, Boris Johnson. And Lee Hsien Loong came out on top with 2.2 million Sing dollars. And the interesting thing about this was that the first Lady of Singapore subsequently waded in to this conversation, saying she has no view either way on who deserves what, but she highlighted the fact that Singapore has a clean wage system, so i.e. that that 2.2 million, while it may seem like a lot, it actually comes with no perks whatsoever. So yeah, she's trying, I guess, in her roundabout way, she's trying to defend the Prime Minister.
Yeah, Singapore minister salaries have been a real hot potato for the government for many, many years, right? And it's really the exorbitant, well, what is seen as exorbitant salaries, right? So the only reason to justify those high salaries is the fact that there is no corruption in the Singapore government. So the whole premise of Singapore minister salaries rests on the presumption that they are justified if that because there is no corruption, which then begs the question, is the Singapore government completely corruption-free?
Wow, that was so deep, Chuang.
No, no, right? I mean, there's only one reason, right? That's the only reason.
Well, they did actually cut his salary at the last elections because there was a bit of, you know, public, I wouldn't say uproar, because there's never any uproar in Singapore, right? Everything's very calm. There was a bit of public dissatisfaction over his salary.
So one apple fell out of the cut, and that, that was described as an uproar.
And then I think they do the other comparison that, you know, you should see his salary versus corporate leaders. Don't always just view it as like, oh, compare Boris Johnson or Mahathir's salary. No, no, no. You run a country, you're like this big-time CEO. CEOs like DBS, they're paid like 12 million Sing dollars. So, hey, 2.2 looks okay. You know, it doesn't look that bad. The country is so well run. What is the issue? My problem with this is that of all people to say that, your wife says it, which is a bit, I don't know, is the optics right?
It's a bit disingenuous, lah, because you're both in the same house, presumably. Presumably, on the assumption.
Yeah, it's probably also worth mentioning, though, that Ho Ching is the CEO of Temasek and probably makes more than Lee Hsien Loong at this rate.
It's a state secret, by the way, guys. Nobody knows how much he makes.
Yeah, and that's another weird thing, right? Because, I mean, look at Khazana and Tan Sri Osman Mokhtar. Until he was, you know, until he no longer is in the position, he was making a multiple of two million ringgit, right? Mm. Multiple.
But then you compare that with some of the Singapore CEOs. They make much more. They make in the 10, 11, 12 million range.
Well, Piyush Gupta at DBS earns, what, 12 million Sing, yes. Right?
So that's the justification. You know, DBS is well-run, Singapore is well-run. Why can't you pay the man the same amount? Or I mean, this is if you look at that argument, then you're getting Lee Hsien Loong for the cheap, right?
Well, so they used 1960 as the starting metric. And then they say that Singapore's GDP has increased by 433 times since 1960. They say that by population, it's Singapore's only second to Malaysia in terms of doubling or in terms of population growth. There's a whole bunch of other metrics as well, like GDP as well. So I don't know. On that basis, yes, they do deserve that salary. Should your wife be the one who defends it? I'm not sure.
But even just whether...
The people should be the endorsement, right?
Sure, but also just taking a look at the fact at the arguments over whether or not Singapore's ministers deserve their salaries, I feel like it is worth pointing out the fact that they don't have a lot of the perks that we associate with ministers, right?
When we think of... Do we know that for sure?
Well, I was in Singapore and shadowed a couple of the ministers last year as part of a journalist visit program, and we were there for just under a week, and that was one of the questions that we asked, right? And they brought us to their Meet the People sessions where some of them meet their constituents, and the thing that we noted that seemingly nobody really noticed was that none of them had drivers.
Yeah,
none
they don't have entourage like ours.
So hang on, so how did they get around?
They drive themselves.
No.
Yes.
No way.
Yeah.
Yes, there was,
no kidding.
There was this really funny kind of like, it wasn't meant to be.
So how do they respond to emails? No, they can't, right, obviously.
No, it's like they had this show in Singapore, The Day in the Life of a Foreign Minister, and he's driving himself he and his wife are driving themselves to the airport. She drops
sure
him off.
Yeah,
she
Good drops. Man.
Yeah, she drops him off. He's off to a state visit. She takes over the car and drives home.
Yeah.
She's like Earth Strong.
No way.
So yeah,
they breathe different oxygen there. Come on.
I mean, you know, we were a bunch of, I think we were 8 Malaysian journalists, okay, and we're all very skeptical when it comes to government anything. So all of us were like, really? Did you know? Did they just put on a show for us? But this was every minister that we met. Some of them we asked, you know, are you sure? Hey, why can't you ask for a driver? And they all just like they all laughed and said, where's the budget for that? No thanks.
Incredible.
And one of the ministers that we met at his Meet the People session, it finished at like 11 o'clock. We were the last ones out we were the last ones out the door. And then he was the last person to close up the office. And
The minister. No
way. And switch off the lights.
And switch off the lights and lock the doors. And he's not just a minister. He held 2 state portfolios. He was mayor of one of the districts. And he was also at his weekly Meet the Constituents session. And then he was like, he waved at us. He had his files. And then he trundled off into his car and drove off.
I gotta see this to believe this. Like, I don't believe you. I don't believe you, Lin Mark.
Yeah, it was an actual thing. And actually, Chili Sauce ran an article about this particular Meet the People session with a Dr. Maliki Osman. It's worth taking a look at it.
No
because
way.
They have no rombongan there.
Rombongan. I've got no reference point. I mean, even in London, Boris Johnson cycles. Okay, cycles is one thing, but he does it for the cameras, lah. Right?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting question, and they do run things a little bit differently down there, as we found out. Anyway, do let us know what you think. What you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're coming up to the 6:30 news, but first here is Here It Goes Again by OK Go, BFM 89.9. That was Sunshine of Your Love by Cream, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mak, Kusu Chuang and Wong Shaning. Now, there is an article in The Star Online this morning, specifically talking about Gojek, because Gojek has received the cabinet nod to come into Malaysia. And this is spotlighting a statement by MCA Youth, saying that the government should actually concentrate on improving the public transport in the country rather than allowing the entry of motorcycle e-hailing. And what do you think about that, Kusu Chuang?
Well, the fact that it emanated from MCA Youth, right? And obviously, The Star is an MCA paper, 40% odd, via Huarun. So you would assume them to take a contrarian stance to Gojek's entry into the country. But they've got a point, because they said that under the previous administration, Barisan Nasional, Barisan actually didn't allow Gojek to come in, because on the premise that there would be a lot of, there would be a higher incidence of motorcycle-related accidents and deaths, which is also a truism, because obviously Malaysia is what it is, right? But then on the flip, and I understand why Syed Saddiq is doing this. Syed Saddiq is doing this because it might offer another option to alleviate unemployment among Malaysia's youth. And according to a lot of data, it's anywhere between 10 to 15, even as high as 18% in the 15 to 24 age range. So by allowing people, youths, to use their motorcycles for alternative income options, that makes entire sense. So I guess the argument is really which is the greater good, right?
I think it's a good idea, like you say, because there's this youth unemployment. The thing is, how do you regulate it? Because you can't just allow these motorcyclists to operate without a framework, right?
I think it's regulating behavior, riding patterns, driving patterns.
Yeah, because as it is, let's be honest, motorcyclists in KL can be very scary.
Drivers,
they're very scary. I'm more scared of them. I'm more scared of motorcycles than I am of cars, because sometimes you can't see where they're coming from. And I don't know about you, but they increasingly seem to beat lights all the time, right?
Yeah.
Now we can't have motorcyclists like that being Gojek drivers. And it'll be a disaster.
Well, our producer Sim says there's two things that seems inalienable in Malaysia. One, of course, is Malaysians' attitude towards public toilets, because it's not their own toilet, so they can do it as they please. And the other one is riding and driving patterns. And we seem to, as he's saying, and I think he's quite right, that some Malaysians seem to have this entitlement when it comes to public roads, because they think it's theirs, right? And, you know, Malaysian riders, you can see the way they ride on roads, public roads, it's as if they own the road. And then when they perform an illegal move, of like running a red light. This happened to me 2 days ago, right? This old guy, and I was in Kajang somewhere, he runs a red light. As he passes my car, and I had to stop for him, right? He looks at me, gives me this big grin, and then gives me the middle finger, and he rides off. And I'm like, what? I couldn't help but laughing, right? Because it's quite funny, because he had no teeth, right? But I was like, what? I was incredulous.
Yeah, I think we all have a motorcycle story or two if you are a car driver, right? You know, I've had multiple cases of motorcycles lingering in my blind spot, and then I indicate and nothing happens. But when I try to change lanes, suddenly they appear out of nowhere and, you know, they hit my car window, or they give me a really nasty look or shout something at me and then zoom off.
Yeah.
So that's very typical of Malaysian motorcyclists. So you have to wonder, will this situation become worse if you actually have motorcycle e-hailing coming into the country?
Or would it be better? Because maybe the company will enforce standards
you
in terms of how they
would, right?
You know, how the motorcycle
drive.
But
how would they do that, though?
I mean, you could be like the case where, like, Grab, right? And, you know, if you're not happy with your driver, you complain.
Mm.
You put in the app, you give him a 1-star. And then, you know, maybe that will motivate him to kind of be a better, safer motorcyclist driver.
He or she might behave the right way when he or she's taking you, right?
But it's the rest of the time.
Well, yeah,
it's when
getting to
no
you
driver,
and leaving after you.
No passenger on the bike, and then there's no one to actually complain. What do you do then, right?
That is
true. You can report, because some of those, you know, those lorries, they got these big numbers on the back, report me if I'm driving wrong, yeah? Except that, I mean, the GrabFood riders now are terrible.
Absolutely.
The way they ride around.
But then if we don't want to, if we do want to improve public transport here in Malaysia, how do we go about it? Because immediately this, you can see why a service like Gojek and even a service like Grab right now is popular. It's because that we don't have that last mile connectivity. So if we don't want to allow Gojek into the Malaysian market, which is obviously a bit of a moot point now since it's been given cabinet approval, but nevertheless in this hypothetical, what can we do to actually, or what could the government do to actually improve the public transport system?
More trains, more stations, more buses, you know, but electric buses.
More reliable.
You know.
So you're not for Gojek?
I am, but I'm more for choice. If there's more choice, then you can choose. And ultimately, the market decides, right?
Yeah, I'm for choice too.
All right, well, let us know what you think. Are you also for choice? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll take a look at some social media after this, as well as what's been said in the papers. But first, here's a couple of messages for you. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Let Forever Be by the Chemical Brothers, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Chuang and Shaoning. Now, thank you very much for your messages this morning. We've had a couple of tweets and WhatsApps on the keys to success, on Singapore's Prime Minister's salaries, as well as Gojek versus public transport. What have we got this morning?
Well, we have Ro, who says the secret to success depends on how you define it. So it's not just always about money.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more with Ro, because we fixate success with capital, right?
Mm-hmm.
With material goods. It's not that way. There's always spiritual success, there's familial success, there's social success, there's travel success. Success comes in many shapes and forms.
Yeah, that's true.
Indeed. And Michael also says, in response to our question of should political leaders be paid as much as CEOs on Twitter, depends, but we should pay our armed forces and police and fire and rescue department higher, that's for sure, before we discuss the politicians.
I agree with that one, actually. Mm-hmm. Our civil servants aren't paid enough. Then for Gojek, and CJ said, I'm for Gojek because the nearest reliable train from Selayang is the LRT at Gombak. And you can't rely on it to be on time.
Andrew on WhatsApp says that in relation to Gojek, it will be more havoc on the road because bikers never follow rules. They will weave in and out and beat the traffic lights, even out of red, illegal parking everywhere and stopping everywhere. Expect more accidents.
Yeah, oh, that's that is a
quite ominous, isn't it?
A little bit ominous. But also, let's take a look this morning at what's been said in the papers. And actually, looking at the New Straits Times, at first glance, it is a bit of a dark and moody front page. But actually, it is a picture of the KL Tower, and the headline here is "Revitalizing an Icon." And they've got this story continued on page 4 and 5 about measures to actually, bring the KL Tower more life and kind of improve its services ahead of this push for more tourism that we're seeing here in Malaysia.
And on the Star front page, it's cabinet reshuffle.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. So the story in page 2 says, ministers to change portfolios. Cabinet was informed of changes during meeting. And apparently our own Prime Minister has openly said in this meeting that he'll be shuffling portfolios of existing ministers, and the reshuffle was imminent.
No job is ever safe, is it?
No. Interesting. Is this a source story?
It looks like only the Star has covered it. Sources say that the Prime Minister...
There we go. Because it's not anywhere in the NST this morning.
It's not in any other paper, is it?
No, not in Malaysian. The Malaysian Reserve on page 1. Plus 29, it's going with a new model from Bugatti.
That's good to know.
Okay, we know your priorities, Chuang.
Yeah, like why all doom and gloom, man? Life is a bit of roses, guys. So Bugatti's launched a new car. It's called the 110, which means 110 in Italian, because that's how we know our languages.
That's how we roll.
It's only $9 million. Okay, so basically,
Shaoning
and Lin, you can place your orders now.
Yes, I'm sure. I'm running out of the studio once the show is over. You know, and we'll be there.
We'll be right behind you, Chuan. Yeah.
I've already placed mine. I want mine in the lurid green polka dot freckles.
Not like your shoes red.
No, those are my Sarigars. Different.
Now, actually, speaking of, you know, feel good, actually looking at the New Straits Times this morning, they are carrying a number of stories under the Spirit of Malaysia badge. So it's almost quite a feel good day in the papers until you get to page 12 of the NST when you see a picture of a skeleton found in an abandoned building in Butterworth.
Cool.
Really, I think it's a little bit sad, actually, Chuang, because they actually do have a picture of this skeleton.
And real skeleton or false skeleton?
It's a real skeleton.
Okay, we're 6 months away from April Fool's.
Not too far from Halloween, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, this seems like something fitting for Halloween. But then, you know, it is a picture of a skeleton lying abandoned on the ground. And you kind of feel for it because it was a person once upon a time.
Well, we'll end on a happy note.
Okay, well, no, before you go on to the happy note, on the subject of skeletons, I'm going to just pick up my copy of Utusan newspaper. Oh, hang on. It's no longer around.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. Sorry.
That was so bad because I was going to end on an elephant saved from abandoned mining porn on page 4 of the Star, right? Nice.
At least. The elephants have lived.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your messages this morning. That was also all that we have from the papers today. Here is Mardi Gras Beads by Parquet Courts, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.